The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. In the Israel Update with Anthony Rach, only on FIFF.
Anthony Rach, a very good morning to you. So quite that story, that Haredi woman winning the Tiberias Marathon.
Actually, I've been wanting to talk a little bit about Bracha Deutsch because she is really an amazing example to many people. The one piece of information that you missed out, just conveniently, is that she's a mother of five. She's 29 years old and a mother of five. Incredible. And she somehow finds time to train and to run these marathons. Obviously, she has incredible natural talent. She's really a fantastic example, not only to the ladies in the Haredi community, but to all ladies and to all of us, because she trains hard and she's serious about what she does. And she's so modest about her achievements that I think that, you know, she's really somebody that we can all look up to. Not only did she win the Tiberias Marathon, but she also won Israel's National Half Marathon Championship a few weeks ago. So this is not just a flash in the pan. I think that we're going to see a lot more from Bracha Deutsch, so we'll keep an eye on her for sure.
Absolutely incredible. Shin Bet has warned that a foreign power will try and intervene in the Israeli elections by using cyber tools to influence the election result. I reported on the story a little bit earlier, but what I don't understand is how they can achieve this.
Well, we're not exactly sure how they plan to achieve this, but the Shin Bet chief, Nadav Argaman, has now come out publicly saying that the Shin Bet knows for sure that there will be an attempt to somehow try to influence the Israeli election coming up on April the 9th. While he hasn't revealed exactly what the methods will be that the Shin Bet knows about, or indeed who the country is that might be involved in trying to influence the election, he says things with a certain air of surety, which indicates that whatever he's telling us is only just the tip of the iceberg as to what exactly the Shin Bet knows. Now, you know, when we speculate about how the foreign country may well try to influence the election, I think there's probably two main ways of doing it. The first way is somehow to hack into the Central Election Committee's information, whether it be trying to change the lists of people who are eligible to vote, or whether it might be somehow hacking into their information in order to change information or to delete or to add, which may well influence the way that people vote ultimately. Bearing in mind that the Israeli voting system is very manual. You've got to go in, you've got to go into the little box, you've got to tick your little voting slip. There is no online option for voting whatsoever. Mm-hmm. The counts are all very manually done. So as much as people might think that that's a little bit backward in the sense that, you know, in this day and age, one would think that there might be a more electronic and more immediate method of voting, somehow it seems as if that might be a blessing in disguise, because there's no possible way of cyber intervention in terms of trying to influence the outcome of the actual voting process. And also the counting and the recording of the results. But probably the most likely scenario is using social media in order somehow to influence people to make statements on behalf of certain parties, to try and get at people who hold a certain view, to try somehow to influence them to vote slightly differently. And that, we think, has been the way that certain powers have tried to infiltrate voting elections that have happened in the past, whether it be the US election or the UK elections or other elections. The French general election, there was a lot of speculation that foreign countries have tried to intervene by using social media to influence the way that people think and the way that people behave. And as to the countries that might well be, you know, on the list of possible candidates for those that, you know, could be the ones trying to influence the election, I mean, obviously Russia is there somewhere because Russia has been accused by the U.S., system of trying somehow to intervene and influence their elections. And Russia was also, I think, accused in the French general election of somehow being involved. It's not clear why Russia would have the interest to be involved in the Israeli election, particularly seeing as that we feel that Russia probably supports the idea of Prime Minister Netanyahu returning to office. And so, you know, there seems to be very little that they need to do in order to make that outcome actually happen, at least certainly the way that the polls are indicating at the moment. But we can't rule out Iran, for example. Or indeed other countries are enemies of Israel, right, and that may well have an interest to see the end of the Netanyahu range, the end of the Netanyahu rule, right, period of rule. The prime minister has actually named Iran and also named Hezbollah and Hamas in the past as somehow trying to hack various aspects of what goes on in Israel. But this is going to be a very, very interesting one because obviously Israel is the capital of the world in terms of cybersecurity. And the question is whether we can deal with our own cybersecurity issues ourselves using the technology that we have, or whether these countries are indeed going to be able to somehow manipulate the election result.
Is there a reason that they would have announced this but given so little information? What's the point? You know, if you want to create some form of awareness, or you want to single out a country you want to expose a country, then I can understand it. But what really were they hoping to achieve by making this announcement?
Well, I think the first thing is to make the country, whoever it is, aware of the fact that the Shin Bet are on this. I mean, we do have a central cybersecurity agency, which ironically the Central Elections Committee does not fall under the jurisdiction of our National Cybersecurity Authority. And it's not clear why that's the case, and there's certainly been some attempts to try and make them fall under. But I think that the intention here is, first of all, to raise the fact in the public domain, saying, we know that you guys are trying to influence things and we're going to be onto you. So you've got to be super smart in what you're doing without necessarily naming names, because naming names comes with many consequences. And especially if you name a name of a country, for example, that might be friendly to Israel for any reason, or we might have some international diplomatic interest with that country, then naming them in the public domain as being the country that's trying to manipulate election results may well have a negative influence on the other diplomatic things that are going on in the international arena. And I suspect that, you know, while we are trying to make sure that we protect ourselves, there is no intention to burn bridges with any country, even a country that may well be trying to influence our election results. So I think that the idea has been just to say, we know that you're trying to do things. We're going to be watching you. We're going to take whatever precautions we need to take in order to secure our elections and to secure the results. But we're not going to name you publicly because we don't necessarily want to break up any relationship that we already have with you.
Very interesting. Do you think they'll be releasing more of this information towards the April elections?
I suspect that there may well be more information coming out. I mean, I don't know how much detail they're going to actually be prepared to release in the final analysis, because, you know, as I say before, every little bit of information that is released has consequences and has diplomatic consequences. And interestingly, the head of the Shin Bet actually made the statement at a conference, and then the agency that controls the media, the national censor, actually decided to block the media from publishing this piece of information until such time as eventually they were convinced to release it. So there's a lot of sensitivity about this information going out into the public domain. And I think that whatever information we do get to hear about in the fullness of time will be very, very tightly controlled indeed.
All right, and certainly something that we're going to keep an eye on in any event as we near towards the election in Israel. 2018 was a record year for Israeli tourism, with more than 4 million tourists visiting. Is there a reason for the rise in tourism in Israel?
Well, I mean, the number of tourists visits in 2018 was up 14% from the previous year, and a whole 42% greater than 2016, the year before that. So this is an astonishing increase in the number of tourists, which already was a booming industry in Israel. And I think that there are a number of main factors that influence the number of tourists that come to Israel. First of all, the security situation. There is no doubt about the fact that when we have security issues, when people feel less secure and less safe coming to Israel, then, you know, the number of tourist visits decreases. increase. And I think 2018 overall had a level of, you know, security associated with it where people, I think, just felt less threatened by whatever political events were going on around the borders. Mm, and so yeah. I think that that certainly has contributed towards an increase in the number of tourists. I think the second thing is just a decrease in the cost of flying to Israel. The airfares are a lot cheaper these days. There are a lot of low-cost airlines that are flying, particularly from Europe. And we find that a lot of our tourists are coming from countries like Russia and from Eastern Europe and indeed from Western Europe. And, you know, some people can get a flight from Europe to Israel for like $50, which is hardly any money at all. Mm, mm. And so I think that that's certainly influencing people to come here. I think the other thing is that there's been much more focus on promoting the Christian sector or the non-Jewish sector, you know, mostly Christians, people who want to come here for religious reasons, tour groups and things like that. And I think that that's become much more common. And in fact, I've even seen South African Christian tour groups. I was once walking
in
the
Old City.
I was walking in the Old City of Jerusalem just through the market, and there was a whole group of South African Christians walking through the market. It was the last thing I expected to see right at that moment in time. It was very interesting for me that there are so many Christians who come along here who feel good about visiting Israel and who see the holy sites and, you know, really feel that, you know, this it's worthwhile for them to come here. And I think the cost has decreased as a result that people are finding it more affordable to come here. And of course, there are also lots and lots of promotions on Jewish groups. You know, let's not forget about birthright tours and things like that, which are constantly being promoted. So I think that there are a lot of good reasons why the number of tourist visits gone up. And let's not forget events that happen in Israel, such as Tel Aviv Gay Pride, which brings in huge numbers of tourists from around the world. Tel Aviv has become one of the most sought after holiday destinations in the world, not only for gays over Gay Pride Week, but just in general, just to come and have a summer holiday in Tel Aviv. I mean, you know, everything is there, good food, nice weather, friendly people, lots of activities, tourist things to see. People like to have excursions to Jerusalem to see some of the historical sites. So overall, I think Israel really does give a lot to the tourist. It presents a lot of opportunities to come and have a great holiday. And by the way, it brings in almost $6 billion of income to Israel every year, which is obviously very substantial indeed.
$6 billion, that's incredible. We don't have a lot of time, but I do want to quickly touch on the death of former foreign minister and defense minister Moshe Ahrens. He died at the age of 93.
Well, Moshe Ahrens has like a statesman-like kind of legacy as a former minister in government. Some people in listening in might recall that he visited South Africa not so long ago on a speaking tour, and people might have had the opportunity to hear him. He was born in Lithuania, but he always had this American accent because he did grow up in the United States before making Aliyah to Israel just after the founding of the state. He immigrated to Israel actually in 1949. He was very closely associated with Beitar, and he served in the Etzel, and he was in the pre-state underground organizations. But I think he was very closely associated with Zev Jabotinsky from the Likud, from the Beitar kind of side of the house. That was always where his sentiments lay. And of course, we shouldn't forget that he was an aeronautical engineer, and he was one of the founders of Israel Aerospace Industries. And he had an amazing contribution to the state of Israel, not only as a government minister, but also in the whole aeronautical area. And let's not forget the work that he did in helping to achieve the peace treaty with Jordan, which I think was one of his big legacies. But ultimately, I think that he will be remembered as being somebody who was really the mentor to current Prime Minister Netanyahu, who really saw him as a father-like figure, and he was really one of his mentors when he started out in politics. He was certainly somebody who promoted Netanyahu, who wanted him to become Israeli ambassador to the U.S. after he saw his performance as ambassador to the United Nations, and he definitely promoted Netanyahu. And the words that Netanyahu used in his obituary when he heard that Moshe Arons died is, he said, "I loved you as a son loves his father." And that's exactly the way that the relationship was between Netanyahu and Moshe Arons. He lived 93 good years. He made an amazing contribution to the state of Israel. He is definitely somebody whose legacy will be long remembered. And of course, our condolences to his family.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow.